Wrong, and this is VOA 1, the hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear from Brian Lynn, Anna Mateo, and Dan Novak. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
The European Union is blaming the government of Belarus for a group of migrants seeking to cross over into Poland. Polish police published a video showing hundreds of migrants, including families with young children, camped just across the border in Belarus. The migrants are mostly from the Middle East. Poland says the migrants are being urged to push their way into the country by the government of Belarus, led by President Alexander Lukashenko. The situation was reported to be calm on Tuesday, but tensions were high along the border Monday when some of the migrants tried to break down a border fence. Polish border guards blocked the migrants' entry into the EU. Polish Prime Minister Mateusz Morawiecki wrote on Twitter that it was in Poland's interest to keep the border closed. He added that the actions urged by Belarus's government threatened the stability and security of the whole EU. Poland and other EU member states accuse Belarus of urging illegal migrants from the Middle East, Afghanistan, and Africa to cross the border into the EU. The critics say Belarus is doing so in answer to sanctions placed on Belarus over human rights abuses. Belarus, which is backed by Russia, denies the accusations. On Tuesday, its defense ministry called the accusations unfounded, and the country's foreign ministry warned Poland against the use of any provocations. The European Commission accused Belarus of illegally offering migrants easy entrance into the EU through its territory. An EC spokesperson said the Lukashenko government was acting in an inhuman way. "He is lying to people, he is misusing people, misleading them, and bringing them to Belarus under the false promise of having easy entry into the EU," the spokesperson said. The EU reacted Tuesday by strengthening visa rules for Belarusian officials. The move requires Belarusian government officials, lawmakers, and diplomats to provide extra documents and pay more money for visas. In the Polish police video published on Twitter, tents and campfires can be seen in near-freezing temperatures. An announcement warned the migrants that crossing the Polish border is only permitted for visa holders at official border crossings. Two United Nations refugee agencies, the UNHCR and International Organization for Migration, called the situation alarming. The agencies said they had been in contact with both the Polish and Belarusian governments and urged them to make sure the large group in the area received humanitarian assistance. I'm Brian Lynn.
In 1997, Chinese winemaker Legacy Peak started producing grapes, more or less, by accident. Now it wins awards in international wine markets. The winery represents the fast growth of China's wine industry. However, at one point, the winemakers came close to giving up. "We wanted to pull out all the vines and call it quits," said Liu Hai. As the company's second-generation owner, he remembers the early struggles trying to grow them in infertile soil. The government gave his family the land in the dry north-central area of Ningxia as payment for work. But there was a condition. They had to grow only grapes. They knew nothing about farming, but they started making wine about 10 years ago. Since then, Leo says the winery has won many awards. It exports to markets in Germany, Southeast Asia, and even France. They do this even though the winery makes less than 100,000 bottles a year. Legacy Peak Winery is not alone. From the hills of Shandong on the east coast to the deep valleys of southwestern Yunnan, Chinese winemakers are winning recognition. China is an up-and-coming fine wine producer, and its best wines can compete on the world stage, said top wine expert Edward Ragg. He studies wine for the Robert Parker Wine Advocate publications. The wines of Chateau Nine Peaks in Shandong and Silver Heights and Grace Vineyards in Ningxia are rated outstanding wine of exceptional complexity and character by Robert Parker. China's wine market is the sixth largest in the world. Wine event organizer VinExpo says that the market was worth $14.8 billion in 2018. It expects sales to hit $18 billion by 2023. However, wineries in China must still fight an image problem. Chinese drinkers question local wine quality and think the prices are too high. It was always easier to sell to foreigners because they are more open-minded, said Liu. But it has been a tough sell with Chinese customers. Modern winemaking in China began in the 1980s. Then leader Deng Xiaoping opened China to foreign businesses, and companies began investing in Chinese wine. One of them was an early form of the French company Rémy Cointreau. This French influence meant that early Chinese wines were copies of French wines. However, by the early 2000s, the quality began to improve. During that time, Chinese vineyards started growing healthier grapes. Also, people in China began making more money, traveling the world, and drinking more wine. These days, homegrown wineries can satisfy Chinese wine drinkers. One such person is Yang Lu. She is in her 30s and owns a restaurant in the Chinese capital, Beijing. She left China for university and has traveled around the world. Last year, for the first time, she drank Mountain Wave, a wine produced in Ningxia. She was surprised by the pleasant smell or aroma of the wine. Until then, Yang had almost always ignored wines made in China. Instead, she would buy imports such as New Zealand wines made from Pinot Noir. Some Chinese winemakers are looking for new ways to make a wine that is known only to China. One such winemaker is Ian Dai. His wine label, Xiaopu, from Ningxia, is priced from $26 to $47. Dai said he wanted more natural methods of winemaking to let grapes express themselves. Dai hopes to find the best grape for Ningxia's climate and that can best represent China. He expects that it might take about 20 years to produce such a wine. I'm Anna Mateo.
A research center has found that students learning English as a second language, or ESL, struggled during the coronavirus health crisis. Last month, the WIDA Consortium, a research group based at the University of Wisconsin, released a study on ESL students. It found English proficiency and growth in English studies decreased during the 2020-2021 school year. WIDA provides standardized tests to English learners in 36 states. State and federal law requires ESL students to be tested from kindergarten through 12th grade. The WIDA test is used to find out if a student should remain in ESL classrooms or join the general student population. Scores in many areas of English proficiency, reading, speaking, listening, and writing, decreased during the last school year. The biggest decreases were in speaking. Students in the elementary and middle school grades showed the biggest decreases, while high school students improved in areas like listening and reading. Educators and school officials say that online classes made it more difficult for ESL students to use English when it was not spoken at home. Students did not have a full day of schooling in English online, said Desiree Edwards. She is the assistant superintendent of Austin Independent School District in Texas. But she expects student performance to improve this year now that classes are returning to normal. There were some limits to the WIDA data, however. WIDA required its tests to be taken in person, even in districts where classes were online. That may have been the reason why 30% fewer students took the WIDA test in 2021 than in 2019 and 2020. Because of the pandemic, students were also tested at irregular times. Instead of being tested every 12 months, students took the test between 9 and 15 months apart. And students who took the test 1 year might not have taken the test again. The total number of students in the study was also low, said Leslie Villegas. She is with the New America Foundation, a public policy research group in Washington, D.C. Students from Texas, California, and New York do not take the WIDA test and are not included in the data. However, those three states have the highest numbers of ESL students. Villegas said the study provides some useful information, but that educators should be careful about forming opinions from it. The information is definitely not representative of all English learners in the country, Villegas said. I think we need to keep that in mind. Students may not have been in a good academic position before the pandemic either, she said. Finding good quality information on English learners' educational progress has been difficult throughout the pandemic, Villegas said. For example, Edwards said there is a gap in data about ESL learners' performance and participation rates in Austin. While Texas has a statewide test to measure performance, the test was not required for all students last year. I would not use 2021 test data to say, oh, this is where we're going as a nation, other than to see if it aligns with something that we have some evidence of locally, Christina Robertson told the publication Education Week. Robertson is the head of ESL programs at Roseville Area Schools in Minnesota. Villegas said states should look at their own test scores and information to find out where to place their resources to best serve their students. The onus is not on students, she said. The onus is on the system to figure out where the need is and target resources and attention and support to those areas. I'm Dan Novak.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation. American History in VOA Special English. The Civil War began in 1861 as a struggle over the right of states to leave the Union. President Abraham Lincoln firmly believed that a state did not have that right, and he declared war on the southern states that tried to leave. Lincoln had only one reason to fight, to save the Union. In time, however, there was another reason to fight, to free the black people held as slaves in the South. Today, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe continue the story of how President Lincoln dealt with this issue.
Lincoln had tried to keep the issue of slavery out of the war. He feared it would weaken the Northern war effort. Many men throughout the North would fight to save the Union. They would not fight to free the slaves. Lincoln also needed the support of the four slave states that had not left the Union: Delaware, Kentucky, Maryland, and Missouri. He could not be sure of their support if he declared that the purpose of the war was to free the slaves. Lincoln was able to follow this policy at first, but the war to save the Union was going badly. The North had not won a decisive victory in Virginia, the heart of the Confederacy. To guarantee continued support for the war, Lincoln was forced to recognize that the issue of slavery was, in fact, a major issue. And on September 22, 1862, he announced a new policy on slavery in the rebel southern states. His announcement became known as the Emancipation Proclamation.
American newspapers printed the proclamation. This is what it said: I, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States and Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, do hereby declare that on the first day of January, 1863, all persons held as slaves within any state then in rebellion against the United States shall then become and be forever free. The government of the United States, including the military and naval forces, will recognize and protect the freedom of such persons, and will interfere in no way with any efforts they may make for their actual freedom. For political reasons, the proclamation did not free slaves in the states that supported the Union, nor did it free slaves in the areas around Norfolk, Virginia, and New Orleans, Louisiana.
Most anti-slavery leaders praised the Emancipation Proclamation. They had waited a long time for such a document. But some did not like it. They said it did not go far enough. It did not free all of the slaves in the United States, only those held by the rebels. Lincoln answered that the Emancipation Proclamation was a military measure. He said he made it under his wartime powers as commander-in-chief. As such, it was legal only in enemy territory. Lincoln agreed that all slaves should be freed. It was his personal opinion, but he did not believe that the Constitution gave him the power to free all the slaves. He hoped that could be done slowly during peacetime.
Lincoln's new policy on slavery was welcomed warmly by the people of Europe. It won special praise in Britain. The British people were deeply concerned about the Civil War in America. The United States Navy had blocked Southern exports of cotton. The British textile industry, which depended on this cotton, was almost dead. Factories were closed. Hundreds of thousands of people were out of work. The British government watched and worried as the war continued month after month. Finally, late in the summer of 1862, British leaders said the time had come for them to intervene. They would try to help settle the American dispute. Britain would propose a peace agreement based on Northern recognition of Southern rights. If the North rejected the agreement, Britain would recognize the Confederacy.
Then came the news that President Lincoln was freeing the slaves of the South. Suddenly, the Civil War was a different war. No longer was it a struggle over Southern rights. Now it was a struggle for human freedom. The British people strongly opposed slavery. When they heard that the slaves would be freed, they gave their support immediately to President Lincoln and the North. Britain's peace proposals were never offered. The Emancipation Proclamation had cost the South the recognition of Britain and France.
The South was furious over the proclamation. Southern newspapers attacked Lincoln. They accused him of trying to create a slave rebellion in states he could not occupy with troops. They also said the proclamation was an invitation for Negroes to murder whites. The Confederate Congress debated several resolutions to fight Lincoln's proclamation. One resolution would make slaves of all Negro soldiers captured from the Union Army. Another called for the execution of white officers who led black troops. Some Southern lawmakers even proposed the death sentence for anyone who spoke against slavery.
In the North, most people cheered the new policy on slaves. Some, however, opposed it. They said the policy would cause the slave states of the Union to secede. Those states would join the Confederacy. Or, they said, it would cause freed slaves to move north and take away jobs from whites. There also was another reason. 1862 was a congressional election year. The Democratic Party was the opposition party at that time. Party leaders believed their candidates would have a better chance of winning if they opposed the policy. Democrats said the policy was proof that anti-slavery extremists were in control of the government.
As we said, Abraham Lincoln announced the Emancipation Proclamation on September 22, 1862. But Lincoln said he would not sign the proclamation until the first day of 1863. That gave the Southern states 100 days to end their rebellion or face the destruction of slavery.
Some people thought Lincoln would withdraw the proclamation at the last minute. They did not believe he would sign a measure that was so extreme. They said the new policy would only make the South fight harder, and as a result, the Civil War would last longer. Others charged that the proclamation was illegal. They said the Constitution did not give the President the power to violate the property rights of citizens.
Lincoln answered the charges. He said, "I think the Constitution gives the Commander-in-Chief special powers under the laws of war. The most that can be said, if so much, is that slaves are property. Is there any question that, by the laws of war, property, both of enemies and friends, may be taken when needed?"
Just before the first of the year, a congressman asked the president if he still planned to sign the Emancipation Proclamation.
"My mind is made up," Lincoln answered. "It must be done. I am driven to it. There is no other way out of our troubles. But although my duty is clear, it is in some way painful. I hope that the people will understand that I act not in anger, but in expectation of a greater good."
The morning of New Year's Day was a busy time for Lincoln. It was a tradition to open the White House on that day so the president could wish visitors a Happy New Year. After the last visitor had gone, Lincoln went to his office. He started to sign the Emancipation Proclamation. Then he stopped. He said,
"I never, in all my life, felt more sure that I was doing right than I do in signing this paper. But I have been shaking hands all day until my arm is tired. When people examine this document, they will say, 'He was not sure about that.' But anyway, it is going to be done."
With those words, he wrote his name at the bottom of the paper. He had issued one of the greatest documents in American history.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.